going? You're listening to the Shine to Five Method with CJ. I'm your host, Kristen N. James, aka CJ, the creator of the Shine to Five Method. What is that, you may be asking? It is a trusted system to help 9 to 5 women push past mediocrity so they can shine in their own businesses. So if you are juggling a 9 to 5 with a side biz right now, then this is for you. Let's work together on breaking up with your employee mindset so you can be in the driver's seat of your life. So buckle up. It's going to be a fun, sometimes bumpy ride, but girl, I'll get you there. Joining me today is another From Bustle to Boss success story. It's Pollyanna Reed, and she is a celebrity ghostwriter. And we're going to be talking about how she created the dream job, dream career, when it didn't even exist. But before we get into the conversation, I want to give Pollyanna a moment to shine and tell us more about yourself, whatever you'd like us to know today. And thank you so much for being here with me.
Excited to be here. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I am a millennial woman who has fought for her dreams and won. I like to intro with that because, you know, I think society is so stuck on titles, but I think it's really important to understand and know who we are beyond them. Okay. First and foremost. Second of all, I'm widely known as a journalist. I am a freelance reporter at Forbes and Business Insider. I write about female leaders who are shaping the future. But when I'm not reporting on women in business, I'm running a company of my own called The Writer's Block, which is a celebrity ghostwriting agency. And I lead a dangerous collective of content ninjas, all women of color. And together, we support the world's leaders and doers who are shaping the future. We help them turn their personal stories into brand assets.
Yes, I love it. Great intro. Okay, episode done, recording done. We don't need anything else. Right. So I know our listeners are usually typically women with a 9 to 5, a full-time job, a corporate job, however you will, and also either thinking about starting or have started or running or growing a side biz. And I know you can speak to that and having that kind of experience and going back to those days. But do you remember now when you sit down, you take those moments to reflect on how far you've come and just celebrating it, but the early days of what it felt like when you decided, okay, I'm going to start my own thing. What was that like for you?
I mean, we're going to go back as early as, you know, I probably got the itch in high school.
Okay.
My father was a professional photographer and had his several side hustles for 30 years. And so I knew I was destined to do something, be something. I didn't necessarily know what that was. I do come from a family of public speakers, deans of universities, pastors, teachers. And so I grew up watching members of my family command stages. So I knew it was going to be something in that realm. I just wasn't sure because honestly, I was a very shy kid. And I think that it's really important to see something before it can come to fruition. So I've always dreamed very colorfully, and my itch came when I didn't really expect it and when I didn't know what it was. But I think it's important to A, allow your dreams to evolve. And B, I think it's also important to understand that you can give yourself grace and you can also experiment mm-hmm. with different things, genres, styles. And so I didn't really put pressure on myself until my college years. But I mean, when I was a kid, I was just I had a wild imagination.
I could relate to that. And I've just been able to get lost in it. And I think it's really important, you know, to be able to nurture those dreams and give yourself that time and that space and the opportunity to manifest. Sometimes they just need to grow, you know, just be in the caterpillar stage for a little bit before you turn into a butterfly. So you said, you know, you've always had the itch. You come from a long line of just very successful people. And I remember I can relate to you when you say you have the itch, because I remember in my corporate days, I was like, this is not it for me. This can't be it for me. And I always knew that I know by no stretch of the imagination, I always say that I am not knocking the 9 to 5 life. Mm-hmm. I just knew going in, opening, you know, swiping my key and going up the elevator and like this, I can't be doing this for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
Right.
And especially, I mean, when you're entering the corporate world, you know, there is a little bit of excitement, but then you come to realize that they actually don't have your back. You come to realize that your value is tied to a dollar amount. You come to realize that there's a hierarchy and you're not really stretched to your true potential. And so I always managed a side hustle outside of work. And one thing that was very important to me when I was in corporate was staying true to my value system. And I always had a checklist of what was important to me before I signed any contract. And one of those things was that they had to respect that I had a life outside of work. If I was not able to balance my 9-to-5 and my side passions, it was not going to work. Because if you make me choose, it's not going to be you.
Yeah. Full stop, period, point done, right? So you mentioned that you had a few, you've always kind of had a side biz. I like to say side biz when you had your 9-to-5. I know from my experience in my corporate days that there were a few that didn't quite stick. And I actually recently did an episode about false starts and not calling them false starts. They're you're putting in effort, which is so much more than what many people are doing, because you're actually trying and you're actually doing, right? But did you ever have any experiences of a side passion, a side project, a side biz that you thought would work out, but it didn't quite work out?
Yeah, I mean, I've had many inventions and ideas. My first ever side hustle was my role as a fashion stylist, actually.
Okay.
And so I would personal shop for wealthy individuals. I would do closet organization. I would work fashion shows. I would style photo shoots and music videos and commercials. And it was something that I was good at, but it was not something that I actually wanted to do long term.
Okay.
Right. And so allowing my dreams to evolve, I explored public speaking. I explored writing on multiple levels. Listen, at one point I thought I was going to be Eric Jerome Dickey, Omar Khayyam, Soldier. I thought I was going to be a spoken word artist,
right,
a dramatic poet. I tried my hand at songwriting. I tried my hand at different mediums because I'm a big believer in following your butterflies. And so I wanted to experiment until something really stuck with me. And so I landed on journalism. And, you know, I've been a journalist for over 10 years. Simultaneously during that time, I also released and published my first novel called Everything I Couldn't Tell My Mother. And then I read an article in 2014 that introduced me to the world of ghostwriting.
Okay.
And that's when the seed was planted. And that was as a result of following my curiosity. I think it's really important to remember that success leaves clues.
Yes.
And if you're not paying attention, you're going to miss your moment.
Yeah.
And when I read that article, that was it for me. That was the light bulb. And that was what I was going to commit my entire existence to.
Okay. I love that. And so now this will be a great segue to you creating It Didn't Exist. And knowing that going into this and trying and succeeding in the past on many different projects, but now you're going to venture into something that, who else is really doing this? How do I get it? What was your process at the start when you made the decision? You had that spark, something clicked for you. What were your early steps, your first steps to really getting the ball rolling?
Yeah, absolutely. So many people are familiar with ghostwriting on the music industry side. Not many people are familiar on the business side, or you know, I didn't really understand if there was another side. I just knew music, ghostwriting. But when I read this article, the individual who was featured, she wrote books for a living. And so I was like, okay, like that was my first aha moment that people didn't write their own books. I was like, oh, this is a thing. So then what happened was, you know, in my corporate life, I was an executive assistant, right? For CEOs and presidents. And I guess you could say I was already ghostwriting without even knowing it, because I would draft emails. I would draft correspondence on behalf of my bosses. I would write their bios or speeches because they knew I was a great writer, you know, and the dots of my life connected. And so at a speaking engagement at a conference, I sat on a panel with my now mentor of 10 years. She owns a communications agency. And, you know, we kept in touch after the event. And one day she was like, I'm actually in the process of onboarding a writer, but I think I'm going to let her go and hire you. And, you know, the lesson here that I want to point out is, you know, when you do have a mentor, when someone's investing in your life, keep them abreast of what you're working on, what you're fighting for, what's important to you. And she then hired me as a freelance writer. And my first assignment was to write a 15-minute speech for one of the biggest supermodels in the world who was going to speak on one of the biggest stages in the world. Mm-hmm. And that was in 2016. I wrote the speech, nailed it. No edits. Of course. And that was my big aha moment that I could really do this and really pursue this in a serious way. And I just needed someone to give me a fighting chance. Because if you look at my track record, I failed grade 11 and 12 English. And honestly, quite frankly, I didn't do well academically in school. And so when I did express to the adults in my life that I wanted to be a writer, they just couldn't see it. But I knew deep inside that nothing was impossible. And if you really want something badly enough, you will teach yourself and you will commit yourself to practice. You'll make practicing a habit.
Yes. Yes. And I love that you mentioned if you really want something badly enough, because one thing I always like to stress or highlight, especially when I start working with a client, is a little exercise I call identifying if they're a want-trepreneur or a meant-trepreneur, because entrepreneurship isn't easy.
Yeah.
And we're not all meant to do it. And
Right. Maybe
you're meant to have be in the 9-to-5 life. So it's that commitment to, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this happen no matter how many obstacles I might encounter. On the topic of obstacles, when you did encounter them, how did you just kind of keep going? How did you know to just keep pushing yourself? Because sometimes we can get so demotivated. And, you know, you work on something and it doesn't quite work out how you'd hoped it would. It doesn't quite go how you thought it was going to go, how you pictured it going. So in those moments, what kind of allowed you or reminded you to keep your head up?
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing is I was a former athlete for several years. So I was used to raising the bar, reaching higher, trying to go faster, working harder. I was used to the habit and the routine of working out, working on the field, swimming in the pool, knowing that I had to exercise muscle memory and knowing that I had to increase my ability, my capacity in order to put numbers on the scoreboard.
Right.
So that was kind of ingrained in me from the start. I think it's also important to remember that this is a long game. I know a lot of millennials, you know, by a certain age, they want to hit a certain mark. I can't say that I had that challenge because I knew that I had a long runway and I was committed to the process, whether it took me 10 weeks, 10 months, 10 years, 100 years. I was excited to get my hands dirty. I was excited to eat dirt. I was excited to figure things out, experiment. There were some times, of course, when I was discouraged, but I just kept my eye on the prize. I just kept my eye on the prize because I knew that there was more outside of the four walls of my corporate job. There had to be. Like, right. There was no freaking way I was going to be here for another 40 years. So I had to just continue until I figured out the code. And that's the thing. Like, there's no magic formula to this. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of experimentation, a lot of trial and error. And even if you have to start over, even if you have to hit reset, you are not starting from scratch. You're starting from experience.
Oh, I love that. Okay. Starting from experience, because it's not a false start. You're starting. This focus on that one word, starting, right?
Right.
And I know one thing I kind of encounter, not kind of, but definitely encounter with working with my clients is that employee mindset, because now we've essentially been conditioned, get an education, get a higher education, apply for the job, get a really good job, get paid in this job. And now you're in this setting where not everyone is kind of like how we were when we're like, this is not it. Like this, I used to feel like I was being put into a box a lot of times, right? But there are the women who have to work through that employee mindset and breaking up with that employee mindset of the structure and the stability and the predictability and, oh my gosh, the benefits and all those things. What's a tip you would have for them who have acknowledged, I have this kind of mindset and I know that I want to take my side biz and make it my main gig, but I'm having a hard time breaking up with it. What's something that they could keep on their minds?
Okay. So I think it's really important that like you understand that like a job may determine your salary, but you can control your total income. I always tell my peers that the number that is on their corporate contract, right? The signing contract, that's what they can afford. It doesn't amount to your true value. And so when I think about navigating my corporate experience, I walked into that building every day as if I was going to business school. They were paying me to learn. And so I did things like I would set up one-on-ones with all the heads of the department a few times a year, 20-minute coffee, just to big them up, hype them. You know, they love to talk about themselves. But I wanted to learn their role and their function. I would offer to sit in meetings that I had no business sitting in, had nothing to do with me, but I'd offer to take notes. I would sit in the back. I wanted to learn how the decision makers came to their conclusions. I wanted to learn how they strategized. What did their whiteboarding sessions look like? I joined clubs and committees so I can build my social skills and networking skills. There are so many things that I did within the corporate arena that really, I don't think I would be the entrepreneur that I am today had I not switched that mindset to look at this opportunity as a benefit, not a deficit. Like, it was really important that I asked a lot of questions. It was really important that I raised my hand. It was really important because if you are not, again, we got to think about the muscle, right? If you're not exercising these things in your corporate life, you think you're just going to switch one day and all of a sudden be eager to do these things in your entrepreneurial life. It just does not work that way. So I studied a lot. I studied how people moved. I studied how people made their decisions. I studied everything around me and I took mental notes and physical notes and I implemented them in my business as I developed it.
Yes, because there are a lot of transferable skills when we come out from our corporate job to becoming an entrepreneur. And of course, one of those things is really strengthening the leadership muscle, because especially when you first start your business, you probably won't necessarily have the resources to hire a team. But once you can hire a team, it's really important to be able to be a good leader.
Right.
And the corporate setting is the perfect place to learn. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you're in a setting where, you know, I come from a long line of toxic bosses, monster bosses that like kind of scare you into perfection. And honestly, you know, subconsciously, I took on those traits when I first started managing people of my own, right? Within my business. And I did not change until honestly, like someone checked me on my team and they're like, listen, you are being a bitch. Like this is not okay. And in 2020, I think those of us who are in leadership positions, we had to relearn, retrain, like all the things we had to manage people and teams differently. So I enrolled in a women's leadership program at Yale and I took 6 weeks off from my company and I became a student. And it was one of the best decisions I made. I think that, you know, you should never, I mean, yes, we should celebrate milestones along the way, but don't ever think that you made it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not enough to just get comfortable. You should always try to learn as a leader, because honestly, it's one of the most exhilarating and terrifying positions I've ever had.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you said when you kind of first decided to create this career as a celebrity ghostwriter, but your past experience and your past relationship with English wasn't the best. So your family or your,
right,
your network, your, you know, your most intimate network were kind of like doubtful about you doing this. But that also translates. What was your, cause another thing that we can struggle with as, especially as new entrepreneurs, is getting the support. Or having the right kind of support. You mentioned that you have a mentor. So in the start, did you feel supported with your decision to pursue this career, this dream job?
I did not feel supported one bit. Many sleepless nights, many tears. And I mean, I can understand why the adults in my life, whether it was my teachers, my guidance counselors, or my parents, I can understand why, because I was not an academic. And so, you know, when you think about a writer, you know, you think about someone who aced, you know, their English classes, and I did not. So it just took me a little bit longer. And, you know, that's a whole other conversation with the traditional education system, and they only teach one style. But mentors allowed me to stand on their shoulders and confide in them. And they really groomed me over the years. I mean, I have 7 mentors. I would say 5 or 6 of them have been in my life for 10 years, mentoring me for 10 years. And so they watched me grow up. And when it comes to your parents and your loved ones, you know, they think they know what's best for you, but it's not always accurate. And so my rule of thumb, you know, when young people ask me this question, they're fighting against their parents, I always say, you know, if you want to change their mind, you have to change their reality. So what that means to me is putting numbers on the scoreboard. Like, I don't even, like, I had stopped arguing with them. I'm going to show them and I'm going to bring the receipts, right? And so when they would come to my speaking engagements and they would see hundreds of people, seats filled, you know, spotlight on me on the stage, when they would come to my travel with me or my business engagements or, you know, like I just exposed them to what was going on in my life. And they're like, you know, their eyes were wide open. So again, that's my rule of thumb. If you want to change their minds, you have to change their reality. And so, you know, like as I evolved, I was able to contribute, you know, financially. I was able to participate in greater conversations. And so then they took me seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times they, like you said, they want the best for you and they don't even really know what you're doing. So by you changing their reality, they sometimes don't even, I know for myself, like my family doesn't necessarily ask me, how are things going in a bit? Because they don't know what to ask, right? So, they don't know what I'm doing. I'm already a coach. Right. What's that about, right? So it's, like you said, changing their reality. And sometimes it just means defining it for them, giving them something and telling them, hey, like, this is what I'm doing or this is what I need from you. Or it's so that they would know what direction to take things in because maybe they're used to, you know, things going a certain way and you're going completely off path. So that, of course, you're not going to know
it's what to do or say.
Yeah.
Unfamiliar and people don't like discomfort. But like, I'm not risk averse. Like I'm willing to lose it all at any given time. I've had my bank account at zero plenty of times, girl.
Girl, but they're red.
Yeah. Negative. But, you know, I've also had a couple hundred grand in my account. I've also won really big. And so that's the thing with entrepreneurship. Like any phone call, any text, any email can simply change your life. And that's why you have to continue moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And on this was a great conversation. And I know, I guess I have to start wrapping up. But do you have anything coming up?
Honestly, it's such an interesting question because honestly, like, my speaking circuit was so full before the pandemic. I love in-person events. I'm actually on my way to Atlanta to speak at a conference this week. But the reason why I say that is because so much has shifted in the pandemic, right? So like I'm focusing a lot less on, because I am not a fan of virtual conferences at all.
Okay.
You know? Focusing a lot less of being front and center and focusing a lot more on working on the systems and operations of my business so I can continue to scale. Because listen, the dream is to be able to run $1 million operation without touching social media, right?
CEO, full CEO life, right?
Exactly. When you ask me what's next, what's next is just knocking out my goals and making sure that I am a high functioning CEO. And then, I am everywhere and anywhere. So you can Google me. I'm easily found.
Yes, I love it. High functioning CEO. So for the future high functioning CEOs that are listening right now, do you have a nugget to share with them today?
Don't miss your moment. You have to understand that success leaves clues.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not paying attention, the opportunity will pass you by.
Don't miss your moment. I love that. Thank you so much for being here with me. This was a great conversation. This was great. Thank you so much. And I wish you, I'm cheering for you. I'm looking out to see the next thing you do because it's going to be great. It's going to be grand. And I am already super proud. Thank you so much for being here.
Awesome.
That's it for now. Question, what was your biggest takeaway? I'd love for you to share your thoughts in a review, and better yet, share this with a friend that you believe needs to hear this. If you are ready to make your side biz your main gig, which means taking center stage so you can shine in your business, I invite you to connect with me. My website is kristinnjames.com, or you can find me on any social media platform at kristinnjames. Take care until next time, and as I always say, have a sparkling day.